Welcome to the Black Entrepreneur Experience Podcast, inside the business, buzz, and brilliance of Black entrepreneurs. Here is your host, Dr. Frances Richards.
What happens in Vegas goes all over the world on Black Entrepreneur Experience, episode number 288.
Thank you for joining us as we elevate the Black entrepreneur experience by interviewing CEOs, thought leaders, innovative thinkers, and Black entrepreneurs across the globe. I'm your host, Dr. Frances Richards, calling all female nonprofit owners interested in lucrative funding. Our next guest is an author, speaker, and entrepreneur that is going to show us the money. Welcome, Reginae Corona.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. Good morning.
Good morning. It is early for both of us. I've given our audience such a brief bio. Why don't you fill in the gaps and share with our audience what you'd like them to know about you and your business?
Absolutely. I always call myself a social entrepreneur, and I am the founder and CEO of a nonprofit organization called Advancing the Seed. And I also do coaching and consulting, helping other entrepreneurs multiply their impact by teaching them to start, grow, and scale profitable and sustainable nonprofits, as well as other types of businesses that have benefit in the world socially and dealing with social issues. So that's kind of what I do. I come from an information technology background. I spent 25 years in that field and loved what I did until one day I woke up and didn't love it anymore and was in search for how I could really use my talents and my skills and even my treasure to make a difference in this world. And I went on this quest for a short period of time of what do I do next? I left that IT career. And my next was volunteering my time and helping in the community and helping small nonprofits. And as I did that, I started to recognize some things, one being the struggle for constant revenue in small and startup nonprofits. They're doing great work, they have great missions, but often the capital just isn't there to sustain the work and the mission, especially for Black-led nonprofits. Connecting to the resources that are needed continues to be a challenge. And I know that's a challenge just across the board for small Black-owned businesses, but the same is true for Black-led nonprofits. So I have spent a good amount of my time since 2013 just learning everything that I could about the nonprofit space, community development, economic development, and how to innovate in business, whether it's a for-profit business or a nonprofit business, in such a way that you're able to help solve for social issues that we have in this world. And so that's why I call myself a social entrepreneur. And I encourage other nonprofit founders and leaders to do the same and to look at themselves in the same way. You're not just a nonprofit leader. You are an entrepreneur. You are just led by a cause mission. And that is what you sell. You sell impact. And so that's a little bit about me. There's a lot more depth and breadth in what I do and what I bring to the table. But that's what I lead with. That's what's so really important to me at this stage in my life.
What problem exists in the world today that you'd like to solve?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. That's a loaded question. I think there are a lot of things that I would love to solve. But one of the things that I get to solve for in my nonprofit, Advancing the Seed, is helping others, especially young adults, see the power and the greatness within themselves, and then learn to stand in that power purposefully as leaders, both in their communities and in business. And in business could be working for someone else in a career, or it could be working for themselves and building business through entrepreneurship. I think all far too often we have these limiting beliefs that keep us from moving forward in our greatness and in our greatest potential. But we all have greatness inside. It's learning how to tap into that. And learning how to tap into that starts with a confidence, a belief that you are not defined by your circumstances or by things that may have happened to you. You're defined by the stories that you tell yourself. So we all tell ourselves certain stories, and we tell different stories at different stages in our lives. And often when we start to disaggregate or disassemble the content of those stories, we find that we're limiting ourselves because we believe a certain thing and we now hold it to be true. And it's often very closely tied to money. So we have these disempowering beliefs around money, which then start to form this story within us about what we can or can't do, what we can or can't achieve, and how far we can or can't go in life. And so the thing that I love to do is help others see through the minutiae of that and break that down, remove those limiting beliefs, which are barriers, and begin to believe in themselves and walk in their truth. And hopefully my goal is to help lead them to a business idea that they can embrace and one that can have positive impact in the world.
Speaking of nonprofits, if you're a nonprofit and you're listening, can you go after venture capitalist funding?
Absolutely. You can go after pretty much any kind of funding. Venture capitalist funding is a little bit harder to get to, only because when you pitch to a venture capitalist, you have to be able to pitch a return on investment. And when you're a nonprofit, you're pitching a return, a social return on investment. So you take the idea of entrepreneurship and everything you do to go after money and to create profitability, and you take the principles and you think in terms of social aspects. So there's social capital, there's, and I don't mean social like social media, it's social impact. So social impact capital, it's social impact selling, it's social impact return on investment. So you have to develop your pitch and your story around the social impact that you're going to have. And you have to connect with people that want to invest in that impact.
What is your zone of genius?
Ooh, my zone of genius. You know, that's a really interesting question. And I used to think that my zone of genius was in information technology. I loved information technology for as long as I can remember. I loved IT and all things related to IT. I was self-taught in programming, and I ended my career with about 7 years in cybersecurity, which was booming. So I used to think that was my zone of genius. And when I moved into community development and economic development and this whole social impact space, I began to realize that my zone of genius is around strategy, business strategy, but business strategy as it relates to social impact and how to take many of the principles around business. And I love, so because I love IT, I love digital marketing, and I love disrupting in this, especially the nonprofit space, with digital marketing concepts and principles, and how you can apply that to get to revenue and to move your nonprofit forward. And that's all strategy. And it's like puzzle pieces to me. So if someone describes a problem to me, I take all of that in. And literally, it's like looking at the pieces before me. And then I start to shuffle them around and see how they fit together. And I never recognized that that was a zone of genius. I just showed up and I would do that a lot, and people would tell me, you know, you're really good at this. And my thinking was, doesn't everybody do this? Doesn't everybody kind of think like this? And I realized that was my zone of genius.
Talk about COVID-19, the pandemic, and pivoting with profit.
Ooh, that's a deep topic to unpack. On the surface, yeah, many people felt like the pandemic was a time of economic woes. And for a lot of people, it was. A lot of people that were running businesses were impacted in such a way where they lost revenue. They weren't prepared to pivot and change their business model to accommodate, you know, everyone being shut in and not being able to go out and do things in person. But for those that were able to strategically change things quickly, revenue increased. And I know for myself personally, revenue increased. It increased in my nonprofit as well as in my for-profit. One of the things that I think is so very important as business owners and leaders is the recognition of trends and noticing when things are beginning to happen. You know, I'll say I don't enjoy watching or listening to the news. However, I will pay attention enough to recognize where things are shifting and moving and beginning to cause trend shifts. And if you were paying attention to what was happening with the pandemic, there were lots of clues of where we were beginning to head. And I know for myself personally, as soon as I saw that, it was probably about 60 days in to the worldwide discussion of what was happening in China, what was happening in Italy. It wasn't happening here in the US as drastically, but we were beginning to see it happen. And my nonprofit, we were already shifting into a space where we were providing remote training. We're a training and development company. We would go in person and do a lot of training with those that we serve. And we were already looking at how could we expand our services by providing remote training services and remote coaching. Well, we had the infrastructure partially in place. We were beginning to do things to test it out. And as soon as I started seeing what was happening, I sped up delivery on that. We started moving into that mode. We started calling our partners and asking them, can we start doing more online to make sure that as we move through this pandemic, if the US is going to have to shut down in the same way other countries are doing, that we can continue to provide our services. And that was one of the best things that could have happened for us, because partners that were not previously paying for our services, we were getting grant funding to do it, actually shifted and began to pay for our services, because now suddenly this was something that they had to rely on to help deliver their services. We partner with other companies and other nonprofits to help support their participants and their employees. And so when this happened, when the shift happened and things started closing down, we were already positioned. And so what I would say is we have to be nimble as nonprofit leaders, as business owners. We have to be nimble and we have to be flexible and be willing to pivot. That word pivot tends to be overused these days, and I'm very careful in using it, but what it really means is being flexible enough in your business and agile enough. When you are small, there's so many things about being small that we get kind of dinged on, but being small means you can be agile and you can adjust quickly without having to go through the red tape and the politics that a bigger business has to. So I think my advice to every small business owner coming out of this pandemic And as we are still shifting and pivoting, to learn to be flexible and agile and to build business that allows for that agility.
You talked about having a for-profit and a nonprofit business. Talk about that strategy. Why did you do both?
Why did I do both? I did both personally because I never intended to have my own nonprofit. I only intended to have this consulting business because that's what I knew. So I came out of IT and I had had my own businesses before. I worked for local government, but in between stints of working for local government, I came out and started my own company. So I knew how to consult. I knew how to negotiate contracts, that kind of stuff I was familiar with. So I settled into what I knew. And I'm a person of faith, and God had very different plans for me. I did consult for a little while before the idea of the nonprofit was placed on my heart. And I didn't want to give up the consulting because I still felt that that was an important thing to do, that I could help other nonprofits. But I also saw that I could help young people and help put them on the path to entrepreneurship, or at the very least, put them on the path to a strong career path with upward mobility. And I wanted to see how I could bring my knowledge and experience into that workforce development space. I learned the strategies around nonprofits, and it was a natural progression for me. And I understood how to start the nonprofit, how to fund it in the beginning, how to build the relationships that were necessary to help it grow and become sustainable. So I put all of that into practice in my own nonprofit. And I have to tell you that it has not always been this easy balance of running a nonprofit and having a for-profit business. And in the beginning, I didn't intend to run the nonprofit. I hired an executive director. And that was one of my first challenges because I hired someone that was a great person, lovely woman who had experience in operations and running a company, but she didn't have experience in fundraising in a nonprofit. And so for 12 months, I thought, okay, I've got this person, they're running the organization, and I gave them a bit of an autonomy. I was on the board, chairing the board, but I also had my eyes on other things. And what quickly happened was we had a very high burn rate in the nonprofit because we had people working for us. We weren't paying big salaries, but we had about three people working for us, and we were paying them monthly. That was the highest part of our burn rate each month. And our revenue, my husband and I invested in the organization initially. That revenue started dwindling very quickly. And about halfway in, I had this sudden revelation, like, oh my gosh, we are not earning income each month, whether it's, you know, donations or grants or selling something that's related to our mission, we just aren't bringing in money. So each month we've got negative cash flow. And for your listeners that are in business, they know that if you have month after month negative cash flow, you're drawing on your capital and you're not adding to it. And you are going to quickly be out of capital. And that's what happened to us. I raised the red flag at 6 months. But, you know, it started to take us a couple of months to really do something about that. By the time we got to that point, everyone had sort of thrown up their hands, walked out and said, well, we can't work if we can't get paid. I totally understand that. But that meant I had to be agile and pivot. And I had to move into running the organization daily. And within 30 days, I had to put a strategy in place to raise some quick funds. So I have this program called 30 Days to 10,000. And that came out of my experience of having to raise $10,000 in 30 days. And we were fortunate enough to be able to raise that $10,000 in about 3 weeks and have an injection of cash back into the company. I came in and started running it day to day. And I've been running it day to day for the past few years since that happened. So it's a juggling act running the two. I do get to take revenue from my for-profit company and put it into the nonprofit as a donation. I enjoy being able to do that. I get to sponsor people through coaching programs. That's great to do. So there's this constant push and pull, knowing where to put your focus. And that's something that a lot of people won't talk to you about. They won't be transparent about that. And I am very authentic and I'm very transparent. And I do give the warning. You can have these great ideas about starting a nonprofit. And if you are already a business owner, you have to have strategies in place to know how you're going to run that nonprofit and keep it going day to day and have it sustainable, because otherwise it will become one more thing that you've created that you have to give your attention to. And we all know anything that's watered down isn't going to be your best. So I would caution other entrepreneurs that if they want to walk that tightrope, it can be done. I have clients that do that. I help them start up their nonprofit businesses, but then we build action plans around how to run those nonprofits where they can have other people that are helping them to do that. So they're able to delegate to volunteers and interns and other people that they can bring into the nonprofit.
Hindsight 2020, would you do it the same way? Would you run both of them? Would you start them both and keep them both? Or would you had just done one or the other?
I think hindsight 2020, I would have put more effort into building my consulting business and injecting money into other organizations, giving pro bono services to other organizations while building the business, which would have allowed me to build a lot more capital and revenue, consistent revenue, even passive income streams through the for-profit business. Then look at a plan for starting the nonprofit. Invest in the nonprofit the same way that I did with seed capital in the beginning, but then select very wisely the people that I would bring in to run the nonprofit. I would still do that the same way. I would just, based on the lessons that I learned, I would select a very different leader for the nonprofit organization. I wouldn't select someone who is good at operations. I would probably select someone who has a very deep network and understanding of fundraising, relationship building, and connections, and someone who is really good at communicating a mission and a cause, sharing the story, and equating that story to a value proposition. That's what I would do differently. And then I would mentor and guide that person in the strategies to put in place to start building on the seed funding that's there. The other thing that I would do very, very differently is, in the beginning, I spent a lot of time getting grant funding and sponsorship for programs. I would focus on earned income revenue streams first to build some consistent revenue in the organization that's not dependent on competitive grants, not dependent on donors, which can come and go. You have some donors that are loyal donors, but you have to work really, really hard to develop those donors into loyal fans of your cause. But I would develop earned income streams first, and then begin to go after the donors and the grants. I'm fortunate that I love to write. That's one of my other genius zones. And I've been able to raise over $7.5 million since 2014 to help support other organizations, as well as bring in funding into my own organization. And writing is a big part of that. Having a process to support that when you're going after grants, all of that, it's a machine and it takes time. And not everyone is good at that. Not everyone is good at the writing. So then consequently, people are going out searching for grant writers. Well, you can find grant writers, but they can't guarantee that what they write is going to bring in the funds. And grant writing is time intensive. It's highly competitive, and grant writers, the good ones, are expensive. And I don't write grants for people very much anymore. I do have very select clients that I do grant writing for, but they are high ticket premium clients that have me on retainer for five figures a month or multiple five figures a year. So, you know, not everyone, especially small entities, can go after grants. There's also this whole thing around grant readiness. You can't just go out and get a grant. You have to be ready to get a grant. You have to have the capacity to support that grant. There are expectations of you as an organization when you get a grant. People talk about free money. Nothing is free. It takes time to support a grant. It takes staff to support a grant. Now, you can get small grants that are under $5,000 that may not require very much effort on your part, but just the relationship building is time and effort, right? So if you can identify what are the things that are related to your mission that you can sell as a service or product, you got to make sure it's related to your mission though, because if it's not related to your mission, then you run the risk of getting into this area of unrelated income. And the IRS looks at that as taxable income. There are some things that you would have to know about that. But if it's related to your mission, you can sell a service and you can, just like any other business, for-profit business that has a business model, you can define ways to sell that service or sell that product. Digital marketing is a way to do it. Online training, course creation, ebooks. There are all manner of things that you can do to create sources of income. And just like a for-profit, many business owners out there have heard this before, create multiple streams of income. You absolutely want to do that in a nonprofit. You need those streams of income. And it's great to go out and have bake sales and sell lunches and those kinds of things. I'm not knocking that. It brings in revenue, but I would love to see nonprofit leaders think bigger. The power of thinking bigger puts your mind in a space where you are ready to receive bigger dollars. You need bigger dollars to have bigger impact. And if we keep going after small dollars, it's kind of like having a scarcity mindset. We operate in thinking, if I can just bring in a few thousand dollars or a couple of hundred dollars, then I can do the mission. No, you've got to think like big nonprofits do. I tell nonprofit leaders and for-profit leaders, think like your IBM, think like your United Way. How do they operate? Set up the processes and the systems in your organization, even though you're small. Set up your organization to operate like you're big. Have an org chart, for example, that lists out all the positions that you need. You might be the one and only person executing on all of those positions, but have the org chart. Know the roles that you need in your organization. Because if you don't, you're not operating like a corporate leader. But if you're a nonprofit, you're a corporation. Guess what? You're a corporate leader. So we've got to think big like a corporate leader.
Who's your ideal client?
Ooh, ideal client on my consulting and coaching side. I have two ideal clients. The first ideal client is in the business to consumer arena, and that is kind of the average person who is looking for assistance in building an entrepreneurial venture. My ideal client is a go-getter. They wake up every morning dreaming about this vision that God has given them, and they just don't know how to manifest that. They don't know how to put it in place. They don't know how to get to it, but they think about it night and day. And they are also someone who wants to do big things so that they can give big. They want to make a big difference in the world. And women tend to gravitate toward me more, but I work with women or men, and women and men. And when someone is motivated to make their dream happen and they are willing to put in the work, they are willing to get up every day and do what's needed. They just need a guide to help point them in the right direction. Man, that's my ideal client. They're hungry and they're ready to learn the how. So I tell people all the time, figure out the what first. Don't worry about the how, because you can find people to help you execute on the how. The order of things is figure out the what. And once you've got the what locked in, find the who. Who is your who to help you get the how figured out? And I'm the who. I like to say I'm Yoda to Luke. So all those Lukes out there that are listening that want to become social entrepreneurs or that are entrepreneurs and want to figure out how to turn that more into a social venture, then I'm your Yoda. I can help you do that. I can help you execute on that and put plans in place, develop the plans, and then walk out the plans. On the business to business side, because I do have an ideal client there, I work with corporate entities as well. So anyone out there listening that might be in a corporate situation, I look for clients who are looking to connect with communities, give back, to do great things, and they're looking to build relationships. I go into those corporate environments and I help them develop strategies and connections into communities to take goals that they might have and help align those goals with community organizations and individuals, community leaders that have similar goals, and they are currently working kind of in a vacuum. So this notion of having collective impact through collaborative efforts, I go in on retainer for anywhere from 3 to 6 months, and I help entities sort through that, build the relationships, and put action plans in place.
Someone's listening to this interview and they're interested in connecting. What is the best way to connect with you?
The best way to connect with me is you can go to my website, which is www.regini.com. And I'm sure you'll have that in the show notes. But I'm sort of like when I built my brand, I wanted to be like Oprah. And I wanted to, my name was unique enough where I could take my first name and just use it everywhere. So if you know how to spell my first name, which is Regianie, you can find me anywhere. You can search me on the internet. You can find my internet presence that way. You can find my social media presence that way. My social media handles, everything is Regini. So it makes it easy.
Thank you for that. There are so many brands and businesses that are dominating. Talk about a brand or a business that's dominating that you admire and why.
There's a few of them, but I am going to talk about a brand that is a personal brand that really resonates with me. And I just mentioned her. It's Oprah. And I know that a lot of people love Oprah, and sometimes to the point where she's talked about so much that it seems like she's over talked about. In my early years, I liked Oprah, but I wouldn't say that I was a big Oprah fan or follower. In my later years now, in my current season, I've just watched what she has done. And I so admire how she has built her brand, a solid brand. She has built influence. She's put in the work and she's built the income around her brand to now be able to do what she chooses to do with her brand, her time, her money. And she gives back a lot. And if you really pay attention to the way that she gives back, it's not always writing a check. It's using her brand and aligning her brand with something that she believes in. Because we now know that all she has to do is lend her name to something. And that's powerful. I aspire to build a brand like that. And I'm 55. I turned 55 this year. I'm not one of those women who don't talk about my age. I'm grateful to be where I am at the stage that I am, in the growth and the maturity that I am, and the wisdom that it has brought in my life. And I am on this journey to build a brand like Oprah, not to be a billionaire, to have all this money. If I'm blessed to become a multimillionaire, a billionaire, then amen. But my desire is to build a brand that has influence and that has wealth that can be given back to make a difference in this world, that can support Black businesses, that can support Latinx businesses, that can support nonprofits that are led by minorities. We tend to get the smallest amount of capital and access to resources. I want to change that. And right now I use my talents, I use my treasures too, what I do have access to make a difference in that. But I'm a big thinker. I'm a visionary. And I think way beyond where I am in the now. And I want to be a brand like an Oprah that can have that kind of impact with my influence, my time, my treasure. That's the brand that I aspire to be right now.
If you conducted this interview, what is the one question you would have asked yourself? I want you to ask the question and answer it.
What stopped you from starting sooner, having a positive impact in the world? And my answer would be doubt and fear and inability to value everything that I have to bring to the table. I grew up, I was adopted, amazing parents that raised me. I was in foster care for the first 18 months of my life. And my parents found me, adopted me, and poured into me. And it was amazing. But I think I always went through this thing of acceptance and trying to prove myself. I'm biracial, very fair skin, and I was much fairer when I was younger. And my parents took me from Oregon and brought me to Compton, California to raise me. And when I grew up in the early 70s, you know, there was a lot of kids who teased me and called me everything that you could possibly, every name you could possibly think of, from high yellow to, you know, just calling me white. And you can understand when you are a Black child growing up in a Black community, to be called white hurts. From a very early age, I learned to be a fighter, both mentally and physically. Thankfully, I stopped fighting at a young age as well, physically, but it built this grit within me, but it also built this sort of hidden insecurity. And I talked about being transparent and authentic. This is something that I talk about now. I didn't always talk about it, but I do talk about it now because it's important to talk about. When we get stuck in striving to be accepted and trying to prove ourselves and you know, we label it with being type A personalities and perfectionists and all of these other things to kind of pretty it up and clean it up. But the reality is inside, we've got confidence issues. We don't feel accepted. So we're constantly trying to prove ourselves. We're constantly trying to show I am valuable. And when we don't recognize our value, we can't operate at our highest level of potential. So I know for a fact that my striving in my career, my striving to prove that I was smart, that I was a valuable person, actually kept me from going out in the world and doing what I am gifted to do, what I am purposed to do. And I still fight this at times. There are still times where I want to do something. And the first thing that rises up within me is, you know, it's that negative chatter that we have in our minds. Well, why do you think you can do this? How are you going to do this? You're going to have to prove that. And now I can fight that a lot faster. I recognize it and I start changing the thought patterns. I have a pattern interrupt in my mind. I'm like, oh no. And I start talking to myself. I can do this. And I'm a person of faith. So I use my faith to talk to myself and affirm myself. But I also talk to myself in terms of, look what you've done. Look what you've accomplished. You are capable of doing this. And it goes, you know, that fear and that doubt goes away. But if I could talk to myself, my younger self, there wouldn't be a lot of things that I would change. I had to go through the challenges. I had to go through the struggles to build that grit, to build that perseverance so that I could be who I am today. So the things that I did wrong, I wouldn't necessarily change, but I would give myself different advice to work from. And it would be all about my mindset and who I am. And, you know, I co-authored a book last year called Act Now. And it's a guide to take action on your greatest goals and dreams. And it gives a simple framework to do that. But the very first chapter in the book, my co-author and I, we took certain topics and we each wrote about those topics and we were the predominant author in that topic. The first chapter is mindset. And that was my chapter. And we both contributed to it, but I was the predominant author on that chapter. There was a reason for that because I struggled through these mindset issues. And I don't care what anybody tells you. I don't care how much it looks like they've got it together because I walked through most of my life looking like I was the image of I've got it together. And people want to be, you know, when I grow up, I want to be like you. And I tell people, stop saying when you grow up, you want to be like me. When you grow up, you want to be like you. Discover who you are. Tap into what's valuable to you. Tap into your dreams, your goals, and be you. Live in the grace that God gave you. Shine with the light that God wants to put on you. But you've got to understand you first. And I went through that work of understanding me. And when I went through that work of understanding me, that was powerful because it allowed me to accept me for who I am, regardless of my characteristics, regardless of how old I am, what gender I am, what race I am. I show up with this internal knowing that I am a person of value. I know my identity. I understand at this point in my life what I'm purposed to do. And I walk in that daily. But it took a journey to get to that point. And for people that are listening, if you're in that journey someplace where you're struggling, just know that there is a point of elevation. There is the other side of that. Not to say you've made it, because you're still, till the day you die, you're going to be growing. You're going to be maturing. You're going to be learning more about who you are. But if you're in that place where you struggle with, am I valuable? Or I need to show up and be perfect. And I stop focusing on that and start identifying who you are. And the place to start identifying who you are is looking at what's important to you. showing up authentically and unapologetically every day in your life means you know what's important to you. I know what my five core values are. And my first one is my relationship with God and Jesus Christ. And that's why when I'm talking, you hear me talk about my faith, because it's my number one value. And I don't negotiate on that. I don't push my faith on anyone else. That's just who I am. I integrate it into what I talk about. And if you want to know me, you get to know that side of me. That's unapologetically, authentically part of who I am. When you know who you are, you show up with confidence and you're able to make decisions quickly. You're able to do the things. You know, sometimes we make decisions and then we go back and we're like, why did I do that? I didn't want to do that. It's because you aren't putting your decisions through a value filter, your core values. Knowing your core values, using that to filter your decisions will help you to get to decisions quickly, and it'll help you to get to decisions that you feel good about because they're congruent with who you are. And I'm going a little bit into that whole thing around knowing who you are. But the reason why I brought that up is because it's so important when you're walking in this space of finding confidence as a business owner, to dream big, to execute big, to do what you know you're called to do.
We've come to the part of our interview. It's called Fun Facts Lightning Round. I'm going to ask you a series of questions and I want you to give me very quick answers. Are you ready for the Fun Facts Lightning Round?
I think I'm ready.
Your first job?
Oh, my first job was a clerical job. I was at the bottom rung of clerical and I used it to learn everything that I could.
Your favorite color?
I used to say I didn't have a favorite color, but I've come to realize that my favorite color is like a deep red or deep burgundy. It's very powerful. It elicits a lot of emotion. And the biggest emotion that I think it elicits is love. I know people connect anger to it, but for me, it's love.
The last movie you saw?
Oh, wow. The last movie I saw was Marvel's Endgames. My family and I watched the series of Marvel movies again, and the last one we watched was Endgame.
You relax doing what?
I relax doing gardening, actually. I love planting and watching things grow, especially fruits and vegetables.
Your favorite singer or rapper?
My favorite singer is Sade.
Your favorite dance song?
Ooh, my favorite dance song is the Cupid Shuffle. Put that on and I'm on the floor dancing every time.
What food you eat every week, no matter what?
This may sound crazy, but I love grapefruit. I love ruby red grapefruit. And so I would eat that every day if I could. I find it really refreshing. I know people don't like grapefruit because they think it's bitter, but I love it.
Your favorite month?
Favorite month? My favorite month is probably October. And the reason why is because every year, faithfully in October, the Lord begins to give me a word for my next year. And it's a clue about what my next year is going to be focused on. And I look forward to that every year.
Work out or hit the couch?
I'm somewhere in between. I like to work out, but my workout is generally walking or dancing. I admit, though, during the pandemic, I became one of those people that didn't stay consistent with working out. So my husband and I are now trying to rebuild that habit.
Regine Corona, thank you so much for joining us on Black Entrepreneur Experience Podcast. Before we let you go, share with our audience the best way for them to connect with you and to do business with you, and feel free to leave all your social media handles.
Oh, well, as I mentioned before, thank you. First of all, thank you for having me. It's been a thrill to be here with you. I've enjoyed it so much. And your audience, I'm just thrilled to be able to share. Anyone can reach me through www.regine.com. And that's R-E-G-E-A. N as in Nancy, I-E. You can also find me on social media. I have a Twitter account. I don't use it that often. I am on Instagram. I am on Facebook. You can use Regine as the handle to find me. I do admit, I will totally be transparent and admit that I am terrible with social media. I'm in and out of social media. You can also reach me through email at rcorona, C-O-R-O-N-A, at advance, A-D-V-A-N-C-E, the, T-H-E, seed, S as in Sam, E-E-D dot org.
Thank you. That's a wrap.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening and subscribing to Black Entrepreneur Experience. We would love for you to leave a review and rating on iTunes and share with your friends. For show notes and more episodes, go to www.beepodcast.com. Join us next Wednesday, and remember, green is the new black. So keep your bank accounts and your business in the black.